This is a double pasha, Tazria and Metzora. And Tazria means when a woman conceives, and Metzora means a person afflicted with Zara'at. Now, we have spoken about this before, but to some of our students and our new students who haven't heard about this, I hope this will be of interest to you. I'm going to keep it very brief but concise, so please try to keep up. This parsha, in fact, both of these parshas, deal chiefly with purity regulations concerning the birth of male and female children, blood flow from the birth, states of impurity surrounding the discharge of bodily fluids, and health perimeters concerning abnormal bodily discharges. It also follows with purification rites and offerings made subsequent to purification. Of major note, both of these parshas deal extensively with a collection of skin conditions known as Zara'at, which are wrongly translated as leprosy in many Bibles. Zara'at, that is mentioned in Leviticus chapter 12, verse 1 to chapter 15, verse 33, is not leprosy. Zara'at is different, and we're going to go through it very quickly. Zara'at is listed in Leviticus as sores, swelling of or reddening of skin, a yellow ring appearing on the body, a scab, a bright spot, a white discoloration, a type of cyst, a crusted area of skin, and is mainly identified by the hair colour on the afflicted spot changing colour. This condition on someone's skin was not contagious, but it's said to have been able to be spread to clothing and to linen. Okay, and you'll find that in Leviticus chapter 13, verse 1 to 59, and chapter 14, verse 1 to 57. Homes can be defiled by Zara'at, this supernatural disease, and I'll call it that, and I'll explain why it's supernatural. God commands the priest to inspect the home, and if he finds greenish or reddish depressions on the walls that go below the surface, and if the purification ceremony does not rid the home of Zara'at, the house would be condemned. And that's in Leviticus 14:37. Clearly, these symptoms are not consistent with leprosy. They bear no resemblance to leprosy. Zara'at, this affliction that people are getting on their bodies, seems to coincide with people who have contravened the laws of ritual purity. If a woman has a period and her husband had gone to her during that time, they get Zara'at. If a woman is still purifying after childbirth, that is, still has blood flow and so forth, and is not completely healed, they're afflicted with Zara'at. There are quite a few things listed throughout Leviticus that intertwine this condition of Zara'at with contravening these purity laws. Okay? Zara'at, I'll skip that, it's quite long. But God states in Leviticus 15, 31 to 33, "In this way you will separate the people of Israel from their uncleanness, so they will not die in a state of uncleanness for defiling my tabernacle which is there with them. Such is the law for the person who has a discharge, for a man who has an emission of semen that makes him unclean, for the woman during her menstrual cycle, for the person, man or woman, with a discharge, and for the man who has sexual relations with a woman while she is in a state of impurity." And you've got this supernatural disease intertwined. Every time God speaks about it, or Moses gives the law concerning purity, you've got this state of Zara'at, it's called, weaving its way through these pastures. So we're seeing that there's a clear connection between the two. You might read between the lines by now. Zara'at comes as a result of disobedience, the first kind associated with not abiding by purification. It's not exactly a sexually transmitted disease, but it is a result of unhygienic practices and defilement of hallowed ground. Moreover, it's a state of affliction dispensed against offenders by God himself. And I'm going to prove that. Leviticus chapter 14, verse 34 states, "When you have entered the land of Canaan, which I am giving you as a possession, and I put an infection of Zara'at in a house in the land that you are about to possess." When I put an infection in the house, God puts Zara'at there. So this isn't just leprosy. this is something supernatural. And that's why I called it the supernatural affliction, because it is dispensed by God. Now, we're not going to go up and down about the purity regulations, but I want you just to consider sacred white light everywhere. You feel the presence of God and he speaks to you. The first thing Adam did was cover himself. You know, he was aware of his nakedness and covered himself up. God, when we have the knowledge of good and evil and we begin to age and we have these discharges and all this type of natural thing happens, it's a very private affair. It's a very private affair, and it's an affair that can cause disease. If you live in the desert or you live in the bush and you're not hygienic after marital practices or during the period, you're going to get sick. And that's apart from dwelling before the tabernacle of God. If you're not hygienic with these practices, with the cycle and with human discharges, bodily fluids, you can get sick. Things can fester and you can die.
And if you're not looking after your home properly.
Well, absolutely. If you're not looking after your home and cleaning it properly. I mean, these are just basics of life and hygiene. But God enforces them as law while he's dwelling amongst the people. Even though he created it, he doesn't want to see it. He doesn't want to see it because these discharges come as a result, even semen and sexual relations for procreation, hence the cycle of a woman. These are created because we have to reproduce. We can't take the tree of life anymore. That's a fact. Could Adam and Eve have children before they took the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil? This is a big debate. I'm going to say no. My personal belief from everything I've seen in the scripture and the Torah is that they had no need to reproduce because they had one another. The whole idea was that God created Eve for Adam so that he would have a partner. He said it's not good for the man to be alone. There's no indication that they themselves would be fruitful and multiply. The earth is told to be fruitful and multiply. The animals are given the blessing to be fruitful and multiply. We can take that word now to ourselves because we are having to multiply, but there's human... the things that God has created, such as the woman's cycle, men's semen, all the different discharges, the purification that has to take place after a woman gives birth, all of these factors are all there and exist because we lost, or our parents lost, the right to the tree of life, therefore they had to reproduce. Hence there's an element of sin attached to them. Not that it's sinful. It's not sinful to be with your wife. It's not sinful to have a period. It's not sinful for any of these things to be happening. But they come as a result that we have to reproduce because we're not taking the tree of life and living forever. That's the point. So God wants people to be purified, uncleansed of it, and understand it, understand why the function is there. And if they don't, Zara'ah was given to them.
It's like the only way God could get through to the people was to use... that symbolism to explain how pure and holy
absolutely.
And clean God is.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Perfection,
and not to
perfection,
come to him
perfection. Dwelling in a bathroom, it's not exactly perfection. But look, what we are told again. So it comes from the hand of God, but we're told in the Haftarah in 2 Kings 5 verse 1 to 27 that Gehazi, a servant of the prophet Elisha, saw an opportunity to make a bit of a crust. In the time when ancient Israel was in a real time of need. And the prophet Elisha had desired no reward or offering for healing a man called Naaman of Zara'at. And as a divine chastisement, the Zara'at passed from this fellow that was healed to this fellow Gehazi, who tried to make some money in a time when people were poor, and his descendants for his greedy and deceptive doing. So clearly this condition was given as a punishment. We also read in this parsha, though, that the ritual upon being cleansed from Zara'at was for the priest to take two live clean birds, cedar, wood, crimson stuff, hyssop, slaughter one of the birds over fresh water, dip the live bird in along with the cedar wood, the crimson stuff, and the hyssop into the bloodied water. Then the priest would sprinkle the blood seven times on the one who was to be cleansed, and they would set a live bird free. It's quite a ritual. If you actually just take it apart and look at it for a moment, that these different ingredients that go into this bowl, blood, sacrifice, hyssop, crimson, wool, this piece of cedar wood, and creates this sacred water for cleansing and for purification and letting one bird go, etc. It's actually very similar, and please don't stone me for this, but in some of the studies I've seen in very, very ancient shamanism. So it shows that once upon a time, the ancients had that knowledge. It's been changed or diverted, or in some cases perverted along the way. Absolutely. So they've had that knowledge passed down, and in the Torah here we see God saying yes, and this is actually how it's done, which is quite amazing. But when we're told about the ritual of cleansing, and we're told about the condition of this Zara'at itself, a virtually unknown fact of Scripture is that King David had Zara'at. And we're told that, or he alludes to, he tells us, it's not written in the book of Samuel, but he alludes to having Zara'at affliction in Psalm 38 as a consequence of his sin with Bathsheba, when he took Uriah the Hittite's wife and had Uriah sent to the front lines, etc. Listen to some of the words. I'll just say this quickly. This is in Psalm 38, verse 1 to 11. Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger or discipline me in your wrath, for your arrows stick fast into me. There is no health in my body, neither is any rest in my bones because of my sin. My wounds grow most foul, stink, and are loathsome, festering because of my foolishness. Okay, that's one. He's physically wounded. And if you think it's metaphorical, think again. Listen to the rest of this. I'm crippled up and prostrate all the day long I go about mourning. My sexual organs are filled with burning, with a loathsome disease, and there is no soundness in my flesh. I'm utterly spent and crushed. I groan in the anguish of my heart. Even the light of my eyes has gone. My lovers and my friends stand aloof from my sore, and my kinsmen stand far off. So there's three things that are mentioned in this week's Parsha concerning Zara'at, this supernatural affliction. David has three of these things showing up on his body. That's in Psalm 38, verse 1 to 11. In Psalm 51, after this, David makes mention of the ritual of post-physical cleansing for the condition. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Hyssop is not used for any other purification except from Zara'at. King David had the condition. It was dispensed against him. And I find it interesting that it's not mentioned in Samuel. You know, we hear when David commits his sins, terrible things happen. A sword swings in his house forever. His children rise up against one another and murder one another. One rapes his own half-sister. You know, terrible things happen in King David's life. An angel stretches out its hand against Jerusalem and kills people that, you know, and puts the blood on David's head. You know, David really goes through it because God swore a promise to him and God's going to keep the promise. So he wasn't just going to take David out and let other people fulfill that promise. He punished David right then and there and set him straight right then and there. He served, so he'd serve a sentence here on earth so that there would be none in the life to come. One of those, of course, from David's mouth himself, as we've just read in the Psalms, was this condition called Zara'at. Not leprosy. And it's very sad that most translations have leprosy, including the Greek. If we look at, when Yeshua heals the man, it states, and some of that's gone, I haven't printed it, okay, Mark chapter 1 verse 40 to 45, the Greek uses the word leprous for the people that Yeshua was healing. But what they have, as described in the New Testament, is not leprosy, because in this specific verse, Yeshua tells the man to go to the temple and be examined by the priest and offer his cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony, which is given in this week's Parsha in relation to Zara'at. So these people that Yeshua is cleansing are to go to the priest, present themselves to show that they haven't got the condition, and offer up the sacrifice and the well-being and thank you to God for being healed of the condition. That's all mentioned in this week's Parsha, so it's not leprosy. If you had leprosy, you didn't go to the priest and offer a sin offering and so forth. You had something else going on with you physically. A major belief among the ancient Hebrew sages was that Zara'at, or this condition, was given because you sinned in secret. So God exposed you publicly. God put something on you. People would, sores, scabs, yellow rings, white things, crustaceans, all of this type of really ugly stuff would happen to you. Everyone would see what you had done in secret. It's quite amazing. Of course, Moses' sister, Miriam, was afflicted with it for 7 days and sent outside the camp for railing against Moses for having a Gentile wife. God didn't like what she and her brother had to say, because essentially they were trying to call God a hypocrite. But God is grace, and his prophet can do what his prophet can do, and God chose him while he had as this foreign wife. But the fact that they got all very religious and very righteous and said to Moses, you've got a wife that's not Hebrew, they were essentially laying that at the feet of God, and God turned around and said, Zaraat. She crossed it up, these white crustaceans, and had to be sent outside of the camp for 7 days. So clearly it's for disobedience and nothing less. Of course, this parsha tells us after the cleansing ritual involving the blood of the bird, the water, the scarlet yarn, the cedar wood, the hyssop, as well as the ritual shaving and bathing of the person, the formerly afflicted would also have to sacrifice 2 lambs for guilt and sin, a female lamb, flour, oil, and set the former offender between the sacrifices. So you think about these 2 lambs slaughtered, these other things poured over the top of them, and here's the offender in between both. Okay? They would cover him in the blood, and the mix would go all over him. It's quite something. He would be forgiven and cleansed. Of course, through Yeshua, the final Lamb of Atonement, the affliction of Zaraat should not have been expected to show up again, and it hasn't. Zaraat has not been seen since the Second Temple period. There are those who state, well, the temple's not there anymore, therefore those laws would not be applicable. But it's stated that during the Babylonian captivity, Jews had Zaraat as well, and there wasn't a temple at that time. In between the First and Second Temple period, and between basically times when Israel didn't have a temple, the Hebrews were getting this supernatural affliction. But then after the Second Temple, after Yeshua, Zaraat disappears. It has not been seen for 2,000 years. So when we think about something that he's taken away, see, Zaraat is essentially one of the curses of the law. If you disobey, you know, this will come upon you. It's gone now. It has not been seen for 2,000 years. And I find it amazing that, you know, unfortunately in some translations we've got leprosy, so people don't think too much about it. They don't think about what he's done in that regard. If we think of all the miracles that Yeshua has done, this one is an eternal miracle to take away a horrific divine chastisement that God had set in place for those who broke the law or who stumbled or got sloppy. If you think about it, when you haven't, you know what I mean, it's not everybody's always on the straight and narrow with their mind fixed on perfection. People falter, but these people faltered and would get Zara up for it. And it wasn't fair. People were being broken down by it. But God had put it in place. Let's not curse the Torah yet. God had put it in place to keep people righteous, but people couldn't be that righteous. So if we think about Yeshua taking away the sins of the world, think about Zaraat being taken away.
The shame and the guilt.
Absolutely. Think of the miracle of that, because it's not understood exactly what this was, and it's so ignored. There's a lot to read in this ritual, and if you even just try to visualize everything you're reading in here about the sacrifices and so forth, it's very intricate. It's bloody. It's sacred. There's something going on between the priests, the offender, God, the lives of animals, blood. You know, it's a lot going on. It's not just someone offering something up on an altar, and then you have Yeshua, the Son of God, the Emmanuel, coming through and simply healing them. Enough. The curse of the Lord be broken. Enough. I thank God, because that's one of the greatest, just in this instance, it's just one of the greatest testimonies to Yeshua, because one of the human arguments is, God, you don't know what it is to be one of us. You don't know how hard it is. Well, we have to live here on this earth, and you don't understand. Well, he came and he understood. And when he saw what we went through, he said, be healed. Be healed. So I think that although some of these laws and sacrifices and rituals that we hear from the pasha might be head-scratching or boring to some people, or Old Testament and not necessary, take a second look. Please take a second look and have a deeper look, because Yeshua came and represented every single one of them and intermingled with them in one way or another. And for Zaraat to disappear from the history of my people and from the whole earth is one of the greatest miracles.
Because now God is reconciled to the planet.
Absolutely, exactly. Exactly, and nothing says it more than what he did when he took that horrific affliction away from humankind.
Got himself into a lot of trouble.
Shabbat Shalom. Yes, Shabbat Shalom.